This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Goddess, what is going on?
What it do, baby? No, I'm just kidding. I'm so happy to be here, Zach.
Goddess,
things are going on.
Let me tell you. Let me talk to you. Let me tell you and everybody who's listening something real fast. You know when Living Corporate put out its pitch decks and like, hey, yo, these are the types of people that we attract, the kind of conversations we have. As soon as I got you, I said, let me make sure I grab this little profile picture. Edit it up. I'm gonna put it right there in that pitch deck. Right. I appreciate you because I think about when you first came on Living Corporate. This was like back in like it might have been like 2019.
I feel like it was 2019. Yeah, it was pre-pandemic. I was just getting my feet wet at Twitter, man. 5 years ago. Oh my God, that still look good, y'all. I hope
you look
so.
Phenomenal. You look phenomenal. Okay. Respectfully to
everyone. It don't crack.
It don't. Sometimes be careful. It bends.
Some people be cracking, but we don't crack.
So you know, it's to your point, like about 5 years ago, right? Like
5 years.
At the time, I remember I was really excited to connect with you because you were and still are like this leading dynamic voice in it, as it pertains to brand and marketing and like understanding like message. But then you also had this, you understood like the connection between brand building and mobilizing community to extend brand, which if I can continue to give you some flowers, further helped educate and like rather inform Living Corporate's future value proposition.
Thank
you. So like, as we exist today, we started off as like a podcast and we went into like this brand storytelling this like digital marketing agency, but now we're really an experiences management company. And like, we have three major pillars. So we have
Pillars. So that's strategy, girl. You know, I love me some pillars. I love me a damn framework. I love
it. We got the data analytics, visualization, and organizational assessments.
Nice.
So we can ingest in anything. We can ingest in customer data, employee experience data.
Yes.
Bringing like intersectional analysis, visualization, super dope stuff, using like R and Python and other things we got going on. We have an e-learning platform that's like self-autonomous, really kind of like very similar to like a music streamer, because we've taken like our podcast library, we built our own LLM and like modularized all our modules.
Wow, that's amazing.
And the third thing we have is the brand storytelling. And so you got to know that you are a genuine inspiration and continue to be an inspiration as I think about, okay, what does it look like to take these stories and like, and position that to organizations who are looking to better, to talk about why they're an employer of choice and what their commitments look like to historically marginalized communities. I think about those big ass billboards you had going on.
Man.
Right. And so like nobody like straight up, like, I genuinely think that like I know there are people that you'll probably never talk to who were inspired by and learned from your ability to leverage digital community to extend enterprise brand. Like that is super dope. It's really hard. And I just want to thank you for being like an incredible ambassador. And like, you talked about your namesake and your family and your legacy last time we were on.
Yes.
And you were talking about honoring and being a good ancestor. We had that conversation.
Yeah.
I want to say you're a witness. Like, I am a witness to that. And I just want to thank you. So, sound man, we're going to put in the podcast recording, we're going to put some applause right here. But
Thank you.
Now, we connected, right? That was back 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I got two kids. I got a whole nother house now.
Woo, we love that. Yes, property.
Less debt, but less debt though. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Pay attention, y'all. You ain't gotta live above you means all the time.
That's right.
But when we connected again, you was Don Dada. I almost came here with my Twitter merch, right? I remember Jack was there with the goatee, John. Back when we all thought Twitter was going to be this utopia forever.
We did.
Talk to me about what happened. Like, it's been some time. Because you was there.
I was there.
Right before.
I was there.
Elon.
Yeah.
So talk to me about like we're gonna get to your current role, but talk to me about what it was like in the last kind of the waning hours of Twitter and that pivot. What did that look like for you?
Yeah, and well, first I wanna, like, you're gonna make me cry on Big Pun, man. You know what I mean? Like, you're trying to represent the BX and you got me emotional. I'm just so grateful to be here. And I remember, you know, you did have me on in 2019, where I had a few wins under my belt, but, you know, a lot of the bulk of what I had dreamed of doing and what you just described, it means so much to me to know that the work that I set out to do is not only successful in its own right, it wasn't perfect, but that it inspired you and allowed you to go on to evolve, to create opportunities for yourself, properties, babies, like this is the whole idea, right? Is to talk about why communities matter so much, but that the work itself would feed back into the communities and offer those opportunities for our own growth, our own connection, and that, of course, economic empowerment. So I want to thank you. And I stand here saying thank you, but every time you see me, you see a lot of people behind me as well who were amazing teams that I was fortunate enough to lead. They were amazing mentors who took risks and time with me. And so, and you know, and like I said in our last meeting, the ancestors who just poured into me what they had. So I just want to thank you for that. And you know, I haven't talked about this too much yet, Zach, but because we got history, I'll definitely take you in. You know, being, I think, at it wasn't even just the waning hours of Twitter. It was the total seismic shift in society at that time. We're talking about late 2022, where the great Netflix correction, if you want to call it that, that's what they call it in the news, where things like streaming and tech and things that, you know, if you had major bones in this industry from a brand perspective, from a tech perspective, even if it was like an engineering perspective, whatever that may be, everything was changing in 2022. And so I think there was already a lot going on. But I think for me, where I remember, and I'll say this, I remember talking to my grandmother who I lost, unfortunately, in 2021. But I remember talking to her and she was big and, you know, she was always in, thought of herself as an activist. She was a big community, you know, leader. And she was also an educator. So she did a lot of work within communities, right? And, you know, lived through the 60s, lived through the 50s, saw this. And I remember talking to her in 2020 and I was saying, isn't this amazing? And we not letting them go back and we moving forward and I got billboards up, you know what I mean, up in Atlanta and this, and yes. I'm making sure our people's voices are heard. And she was like so happy for me. And then she just said, but babe, like measure your success about, you know, as far as they take you back after the progress, because they gonna get mad. And it's going to be some backsliding on the progress. So she was like, this is great. It looks like you've done that, but there's going to be a pushback. So now you see, you came from here. Did you really go here or are you actually here? Meaning, you know, and I was kind of like, oh, that felt a little pessimistic at the time. But having someone who went, you know, lived through the civil rights era, lived through watching major, major moments of policy change enacted around human rights, around civil rights, and then watching societal backlash to it, I think I recognized in the waning days of Twitter that that's what was happening. And I want to be very clear that, you know, Twitter was not perfect at all, but the Twitter that I was a part of was trying to showcase two things. One, that you could have a platform and a service that could be a conduit for communities, that could be a voice and a platform for people that was democratized in every way, and that people could have an opportunity to talk about who they were, to find each other. Now, that was not perfect, and we know that, right? But the other part of Twitter was that the people inside Twitter could also represent those same people that you saw outside, that there would be an opportunity to have fully remote work, because that meant that anyone anywhere could work at the service, right? Because that's what we were serving. So I think when old boy came over to Twitter, I recognized, I'm going to just call him old boy right now because the name triggered.
I respect it.
Yeah, you know, and so I think when he came over, I recognized that there was about to be an assault on all of that. There was about to be an assault on communities being able to speak up and be democratized, people being able to teach each other and be informed, people being able to find communities together. And there was going to be, there couldn't be no utopia of a company that had Black leadership and people LGBTQ plus leadership, right? And all of these places making decisions about the communities. And we didn't even get to the utopia. We were still like fighting an uphill battle, but just the mere chance of progress, the small modicum of forward progression, the idea that people were working remotely and it felt freer to them and they could be with their children and they could rest and they could have hobbies and also pour into work that they cared about. That all had to be shut down. And so I think I recognized that it was tough, and I made sure that I was there for my team and we talked through what would it be like for us to try and survive through whatever was coming next, if we were here or not. And I think we were very clear that the work that we were doing at Twitter would no longer exist under this person. It was fundamentally clear. Not only would the work not exist, but he didn't want people like us running that work. Like you said, Don Dada, you know what I mean? Like a girl had a little bit of juicy.
You had the juice. Sauce. You had the sauce. Not the juice. You had the sauce. And you know, it's to your point, right? I was so disturbed because I remember people were, you know, they were tweeting about it in real time.
Oh yeah.
And I remember, and I can't remember the brother's name. And I wouldn't say their name on here mm-hmm. in the spirit of I don't want to. He tweeted something though, Goddess, and I said, mm. "Oh, that really got me." He said, "He was one of the community builders mm-hmm. at Twitter," mm-hmm. and he said, "I will never build up something for someone else to control again. Like this will be my last time."
Yeah. Oh, I know who that was.
and I almost cried. Like I teared up because I was like, "Dang, that is like." And in principle, I understand it. And I agree, obviously.
You got your own thing, yeah.
Right. But my thing is, it's just like, damn, like, what does that mean for just like Black creative? So every time you want to be creative and you want to build something for community, you got to start from scratch and build it, right? You can't, so the day, and so what struck me about that moment at Twitter was that to me, it also signaled a shift in it signaled a seismic shift at the intersection of Black creativity and tech spaces. I don't believe since then we have seen the same level of energy and investment by Black and brown people into major tech platforms, because it's like, well, wait, nah. You could just take all of this.
Yeah.
Right. And mm-hmm. then like we see that reinforced even with these current layoffs. Before I jump to that, we're back on your timeline. So I think I remember at that time we were in court, we were in communication because we were talking about getting on the pod, and I was working with your PR person.
And I was like, ooh.
And your PR person is now over at Eventbrite. Shout out to Viviana. She's still rocking.
Yes.
And so
other homegirls over at Kickstarter, she was with me a lot of the time at Twitter.
But then you was rocking with MGD at the time.
Yeah.
Right? Because we just had her on the show. So like so here's my thing though. You pivot from that and then you go to Disney.
Yeah.
What did that look like? And how did that feel?
Yeah. We live in corporate today, boy.
We live in corporate today. I've been waiting for this conversation.
Yeah, you know, so again, I will say that the way things ended at Twitter, and not because of anyone who I worked with during my time there, but the way it ended is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, professional heartbreak of my career. Mm-hmm. I will I was devastated, even though I knew the boulder was coming, you know? And I also want folks to understand that, like, there was a lot of up and down in that process. There was a lot of, is he, isn't he, courts and this, you know, there was a lot of like, what is going to happen? And even through that, there was so much destabilization and attention and resources that had to be now put towards this outside of the things that we should have been focusing on. But again, we had no choice. And I think it was just a larger play about who gets to have the power and resources to destabilize, you know, organizations that are integral in our society. I think that was huge. So to me, I think that what I did hinge on when I was leaving Twitter, you know, and I will say this, I was not a part of the sort of big first cut that came in. I left about 2 weeks before that happened. And at the time, we were under the impression that there was going to be a court decision that we would come out okay in. And I wanted to then elevate my team who had been doing extremely well. And I felt like it's time for y'all to now rebuild this. We're going to be okay, you know, in the way that, you know, we the next era of what this could be. They came up under my tutelage there. They were ready. And what I felt was that no matter what was going on and all the destabilizing that happened in the final days, I still felt that the work that I had done and my team had done was a proof point. It was a proof point in saying you can absolutely create an org, invest real power in the leadership of color or one who represents the communities you're trying to serve. And that's why I say, like, I joke about having the juice, but I give all the love and praise to Nola Weinstein and Leslie Berlin and Jack during his time there. And, you know, even Ned, our CFO, like, that was a lot of power and trust that they gave me. And so when I always tell companies, take a chance on us and like, look at where we can take you. And so because of that, I felt that we had proven that when you invest in communities who are your consumers, this ain't even like communities that's just, you know, we doing this to be nice. These are our consumers that made us who we are. They are the ones that use our service or buy our product or, you know, but subscribe. They are our consumers. And when you invest in the ones that are most marginalized, you can make things better for everybody. And that includes an investment in what you started the pod talking about is brand storytelling. How are they a part of that story? Because they're usually leading the most popular culture around why your brand is what it is anyway. So they need to be a part of that storytelling. But the other thing that I wanted to prove was also that they can be integral in how we create products, build products, how we write policy and enforce policy. And I think that as crazy and chaotic as the end was, I felt very proud that my position existed at Instagram now. That position exists at WhatsApp. I remember sitting at my kitchen table and writing it out, asking my mom, does this sound good? Should I put global director? That sound jiggy, right? Okay, like, you know what I mean? And so like, I remember writing my JD. And again, that's the power and trust that I was, you know, given by the amazing leadership at Twitter. And to watch that position exist at other places was phenomenal. So when Disney came to me with a brand new position that they had never been able to wrap their minds around at a VP of inclusive marketing, you're talking about Disney right down the middle of Main Street, USA. Like, you know, they are apple pie and baseball, and they have never had to sort of charter the waters that were in the times of 2022 and sort of post really 2016. And they were in the middle of it. So I felt that going to a very different company, but was a staple of brand. There is about no more ubiquitous global brand than the Walt Disney Company. And then also to showcase that the work we had done for the past and even work I had done at VML, YNR on the brand side was becoming something that top brands felt they needed to invest in. So I wanted to go there and prove out if it could work.
So you, because I'm going to tell you something, the way it looked outside, I was like, dang, she slid straight from that.
Yeah, it did look like that.
Pivoted to Disney.
Yeah.
And so then now, right? Like, seamless. you're now the chief content officer at Essence Venture. So like,
yes.
Talk to me about like this journey, right? Because for me, it's like, to me, it looks like you went from like, again, like everything is still marketing, right? Everything is still brand. Everything is still connection. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like effective and powerful content strategy fosters that.
Right. Exactly.
Talk to me about what it is you picked up and learned from your longer time at Twitter, your shorter time at Disney, to now being the chief content officer in Essence Ventures. Like, what does that look like? How does that impact your day-to-day role? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, one is, you know, remembering I started my career as the lowly senior social strategist. And then, like, you know, I took a marketing job just to figure it out because I thought I was going to be a journalist and that didn't work out because it was the first recession, almost 20 years ago, about 15 years ago now. And then going into marketing. So my first role was always social media strategy. And that was sort of where I came up in the agency world and then landed at VML, where I was able to sort of flip that work and focus still on strategy, but bringing in audience sort of. And I would say I really sort of do audience strategy, no matter what. I do audience strategy. Now, once we figure out how to connect with that audience, most of the time it is always through content, right? Because of where we are. And, you know, whether it was tweets or it was experiences during my time at Twitter, whether it was straight up campaign work on my ad days, I've always been really entrenched in content. And so, at Disney, I think what I learned, Disney was going through a lot. I don't mean, if you saw any of the headlines during the time there, it was the idea that streaming, which is the business I came in to work on, was changing a lot as far as profitability. That's for any company. But also there was huge, I ain't calling it no damn culture war because that don't even make no damn sense. Ain't nobody on the other side fighting y'all. Like it's y'all fighting. You know what I'm saying? Like a war means that two people would oppose. Like, no, it's
with equal. Yeah.
This right. Not- it's somebody causing problems because they're afraid they're losing power straight up and down. Right.
Straight up and down.
And so while that was happening with some of the right wing stuff, like you, what I learned is one, what's important for a leader from an internal company perspective. And then also again, audience strategy. What does your audience want to see? What are they connecting with from you as a company, from what you're putting out into the world? And again, you can't get more, again, ubiquitous, well-known content and IP than thinking about Walt Disney. So I learned a lot there and sort of just no matter what is happening, no matter where you are, those are the two pieces that you need to be really clear on. Your audience strategy, and that includes understanding different layers and intersections, right? And then how are you connecting with them? That is brand storytelling and content. So when I got the call from Rich Dennis and Caroline Wanga to say, look, we've got this really interesting role. We're thinking about it very differently than we have in the past. And we sort of want someone that has this sort of brand storytelling background because we're in a digital media space with a legacy company that was Essence. Another legacy company that is Afropunk, right? Different levels of legacy there. And then some really awesome opportunities with Essence Studio, which is its own production house and ways to tell stories going forward. I looked at it as what an amazing opportunity to do more audience strategy, understanding different global audiences, and then telling stories that they are connecting to and partnering with them to tell the stories. Mm-hmm. And I sailed it to say that it also was not lost on me that our stories, certain community stories, were under attack. And I felt like I've done the, you know, I could sell a lot. I was the pitch girl. Like, you know, I could win you some business, but like, do I want to look back at my career and know that I always know that I did what I could for my community? And I'm watching policy, not just in the United States, but globally, be enacted that is erasing history, that is skewing stories, that is counting out people that have something to say and different points of view. And now I'm also seeing the death and transformation of some of the services and platforms that did that over the last 10 years and forced media to be more inclusive like Twitter. And so I wanted to come here and make sure that I continue to sharpen how we connect with communities, but also be really cognizant of the fact that I could bring narratives forward during a time where media and the press itself is truly, you know, trying to do their best to maintain their really integral role in society, because there's so many pressures. And it's an interesting time.
You know, it's interesting, as to your point about it being an interesting time, like, I think technology continues to compress everything. So like, yeah. You know, when I was a kid, you know, it just felt like things were kind of in their own space, you know, like, okay, I got my AOL chat room over here.
Right.
I got my
ASL.
I got my ASL. You know, ask me, we talk about ASL in the chat. I got my football practice over here. I got school over here.
Right.
Everything now is just so interconnected.
Yeah.
You talk about this idea of like brand storytelling with like, and you building and understanding audience engagement and building and analyzing audience at legacy brands. Like, what perspective or advice would you give to legacy brands? Because I could see some people say, well, yeah, Twitter was probably a great use case study or example of the idea of connecting EX and CX strategy and brand storytelling for like market engagement and enterprise because of the platform that is Twitter, which is, it's, you're always interacting. But like, what would you say to those who, like, let's say a big oil and gas company or some type of energy company, or maybe a company that only focuses on VPNs. Like, what is that? What is the work that you're talking about? How does that translate into audiences or contexts where the product is not so forwardly social?
Yeah. I mean, I wholeheartedly believe that every single company should have some type of role or function, or at least lens of culture and community within its ranks. And I think one of the things I've been reading a lot about is, you know, there's all this sort of generational wars. The baby boomers don't want to sell their houses, and everybody's talking about millennials, and I'm a geriatric millennial, and avocado toast, which I don't even like, and Gen Z's like, hell with all y'all. We ain't coming in the office. We going on vacation. We not going to have no social security, right? So it's all kind of a mess. But I think what the bigger, more interesting pieces that we've seen is that the private sector used to be very, and again, you're talking about a society that has never been perfect. It has always been marred with iniquity at every turn, globally, not even just the United States. But also, of course, here in the U.S. But there was a time where the private sector felt that they were somewhat compelled to be responsible for the evolution of society, right? And so I think that as we have watched that erode in place of profits, what we have lost is that every damn brand should be worrying about the well-being of the constituents that it serves. I use an energy brand here in Connecticut where I live. And I just was reading an article about how, you know, a 30% spike, right, in the Hertz rate of energy has now made a huge impact on low-income families where kids are rationing out time to do homework, time to turn maybe the electric heater on because they're in buildings where there's other types of issues. And so you might be this fat cat energy titan and tycoon, but your work, your product and your service always affects communities. You should always be in tune. And let me tell you, you get it right, you do a sliding scale. I'm making something up. So now that same mother and father in that low-income property, now they can say, you know what, it is a sliding scale. I'm on this percentile. Now my child can do their homework all night. I guarantee you that family stays with you for the rest of their life. Yeah. A loyalty they'll give that company, right? When they understand the problems. And who? That kid got a scholarship. Now that kid's able to go to Howard or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's a ripple effect, but we lost the idea that companies that make money have a responsibility to reinvest in the consumers who make them millions of dollars. It sounds like crazy now, you know? And so I think there's a lot more. I think, as you said, there's sexier brands where we're telling deep, enriching stories and documentaries, and we're doing something really cool in the entertainment space. But every brand, from food service to, as you mentioned, energy and oil, to education and academia. Everybody should understand that the communities they serve, because the idea is, yes, we're in a capitalistic society. There's a million thoughts about that. There can be revenue, but there also can be reinvestment into the society that we serve. And then really, the whole entire ecosystem feeds on itself in a positive evolution. And we have lost sight of that. And I believe, I won't say the name because I'm trained from my media years of agency. We can never say the names of brands, but there's a certain airline who lost its way.
Yeah.
Who prided itself on innovation, right? Yeah. And then you replace that, prided itself. It wasn't just innovation, though. It was that you could go to this town where it's located on the West Coast, and it was a pride to work there. That it created a community. That created a lot of kids and people that went on and did other things because they had parents who worked at that airline who were proud of their work, who had a work-life balance. Like, it's an entire ecosystem. We have lost track of that. So to me, like, what I'm asking is very bare minimum. It's not even extra.
And to your point, though, like, we've pivoted away from that. So, like, what do you think happens for us to pivot back to it? Because it seems as if we're accelerating, accelerating at almost an exponential pace,
right?
Further and further away from the concept of reinvesting back into your customer, your client base, or really into your customer experience.
Yeah,
it seems as if that's not the case. So like,
we're going the opposite direction.
So what happens?
Well, that's why I'll never stop telling stories of people who need to be heard. Because the one thing I can tell you is when you have a balanced ecosystem, and again, I'm even naming a time past that wasn't even fully equitable. Right. Like, there was still folks who wasn't being included in that, right? It wasn't perfect then. So I want to be very clear about that. But it was more balanced that it was harder for some to sort of pinpoint, like, this is messed up. Like, what's going on? I think the difference, and it's a little scary, but I still believe that light will always prevail. Mm-hmm. I think in the direction that we're going in is that the people who benefit and are like doing okay are the part of the pool is smaller and smaller.
Right.
So at some point, you're going to be like, oh, great, 10 people are doing awesome. And there's 213 million doing not great. Like, you know what I mean? Like, at some point, but that's when you need things, platforms, or, you know, places like a Twitter. You need people like an Essence Venture to say, we are telling the stories about home ownership in the Black community and the difference between appraisals between Black, homeowners and white homeowners. You need us to continue shining a light on these things happening so that we can make sure that people are informed. People know that they can connect with one another and say, hey, this doesn't make sense. You know, we're going to challenge that energy rate because now I know maybe I'm not in the low income housing. Maybe I'm in my little, you know, upper middle class. But now I know that there's somebody on the other side of where I live that somebody's child can't do their homework all night. You tell enough people that, I believe in light and I believe that people will care. And so, again, like I said, I think that that's why it's so important for me to continue to speak to brands and continue to lay on them about their responsibility. Because again, ain't nobody gonna work their whole life so that 15 people could do great. I'm sorry, no, that's not gonna work. Not. You know what happens? Marie Antoinette is the case study there. So we know where we're going. Yeah. Why don't we just switch course before we get
all the way there? Yeah,
all the way there. We're not trying to get there.
First of all, I can't thank you enough. Like, I 1000% agree. And I also will say, I respect and appreciate you looking like not so optimism sounds like to me, optimism rings almost, there's like an undertone of like naivete there. So I'm not going to say, but you have an action in mind and there's things you're actively doing.
Yes.
And there's use cases you're building to create pressure for us to shift back into. And it's, you know, the irony is that the model that you're articulating and the model I agree with is still capitalistic. Hey,
it is. There's still profits.
It's still profit.
Right.
It's still capitalistic.
There's still workers and owner. There is. It is.
It's like, hey, look, as opposed to you taking this big chunk right now.
Right now.
Why don't you just take some of that huge chunk, invest it back over here so that you can have more chunks later.
Everybody can have a little bit more of a chunk. I'm just like, you know, I used to always joke. Sorry, I'm a hate on the men's for a little bit. Like,
no, hate on us, because that was my next
question.
Bit,
just a little bit. And it's a light hate, but it's, you know, I remember being in school and I'm an only child. I used to get my homework done like that. Like, I'm getting that done because I don't want to hear my mama yelling at me. I'm going to do all this other stuff now that she don't question me on, and sneaking out the house and partying because I got my work done. But every guy that I knew was like, I forgot to turn in the homework. My mama's yelling at me. And I'm like, didn't you just, every day, you know that this is going to happen. Why don't we just, let's skip that part and go to this. So, you know, to have people that are so squoze and so stressed. And I think that it's all around. And so, you know, I wrote an op-ed about, you know, Dr. Candia Bailey, who was an academic administrator who, unfortunately, Black woman took her own life because she was not being supported in her workplace. And so it's not just the work I'm putting out either. I also challenge myself as a leader to make sure that the people who I am, you know, who report into me, who rely on me for leadership and mentorship, to even do this work, that I am empathetic to what they need. I am teaching how to be a leader. There's no need for, I think, negativity and vitriol in business. We put it there. Mm-hmm. Like, people make mistakes. I make mistakes. People do try things that don't work. There's no need for anyone to be awful and terrible. And yes, there's hard, you know, there's sometimes there's cost and there's hard decisions to be made. And I've been on both sides of that. But I think that we have just gotten to a point where we're not even now thinking about, do people need to rest?
Yeah.
People need to bond with their kids. People need to make sure that their mental health is okay. All of that goes back into the ecosystem, you know?
There's this like there's just this hyper extraction of what we're living in, right? Where it's just like every day these systems, like they remind you that you're only as valuable as your rate of production.
Right.
And it gets tough. It gets tough, especially thinking about this market that we're in right now. But like,
gosh.
So, you know, to your point about your, like, healthy hate on the men.
A little bit. It just looked like high school.
Tiny hate.
High school hate.
Tiny. Yeah, look. Tiny. Like, So back to it. You were hired by another Black woman.
Yes.
To now be a chief content officer.
Yep.
At a company that supports brands, including major brands that also highlight Black women. Like,
yeah.
I'm curious about, what is this experience like for you here as a Black woman, senior executive?
Yeah.
Yeah. C-suite executive, in this particular dynamic, and how is this dynamic perhaps different than other contexts you've been in?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the first C-suite in my family on both sides. And my mother said that to me, and I was like, oh my God. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I never, you're just like, I got to keep going. I got to do the things. I got to.
Right.
So, I mean, the milestone, again, the ripple, my daughter being very comfortable. You know, she's in the seventh grade now. And we talked, she was in the third grade, second grade, depending on what month that was in 2019. I think the ripple effect of what that means and what taking this role on has meant for me personally is, that's just one small part of it. I think the larger piece is exactly what I'm saying, is that, like, I'm always, since day one, since I got on this earth, just been always willing to ride for my people and those who have experienced things as my people have, you know? And so I think that, you know, being in an environment that not only is Black and telling our stories and uplifting our people from the joy, the pain, the confusion, you know, dealing in real time with some of the things that are coming down the pike, but it's the history of this company. You know, this was the company that told my grandmother that she could be a successful executive, that she could be, she could go back and get her master's and start her own business, you know, and who said to my mom, like, it's okay. Like, if you and, you know, your spouse didn't get married, you can co-parent together and that's all right. And your child, me, could still be successful. Those, the history of that, it's like, I can't describe the feeling of responsibility that I have when I think about this brand. And then I think about the newer extensions like Afropunk, making sure, you know, a legacy of being a community for those who have been ostracized for in different ways and who were on the outskirts of society when they needed to be integral to society and who were pushing culture forward. You know, something like a beauty con that can completely tear down the walls of what we've known about what is beautiful, right? Yeah. And so I think that is, you know, what's so inspiring to me. And I just feel an immense sense of responsibility to the community that I'm serving. And again, you know, our brands, we say it's the new general market, right? We serve primarily Black audiences with most of our brands. Sorry, this sound is crazy. but we also serve the new general market, which includes, you know, all different types of ages and different people of different backgrounds and orientations and parts of the world and physical abilities. And so I think that is what I've always tried to do, is make sure that we were creating a ecosystem a method of moving forward the things that they care about, and making sure that I say this at Twitter, like, I'm not looking at y'all outside the fishbowl. I'm swimming with y'all. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm always swimming with y'all. Like, we up in this mug together. Like, you know, I don't want to be on the outside of these things happening. And I think that's what begets the best work. So I, you know, I say that when you have someone like a Black executive who could make a decision that is life-changing for my family. And then hopefully I know I have the responsibility to be life-changing and push what I can for my community. And then also to the folks who are at this company now, I have one of the most talented teams in the business. They're so amazing. And I love being able to pour into them and also learn from them. You know, it's a new industry for me as well. You know, media, I know content, but media is different and new. And so I've been able to grow and stretch myself and trust an amazing team with that. And it's been, I hope, mutually beneficial, but we have a good time.
Goddess, look, you dropped multiple mics there. I feel like we got to end it right here. I appreciate you again, giving your flowers. I'm excited about the work you're doing at Essence Ventures. I want us to keep, of course, we're going to keep lines of communication open.
Of course.
You're a friend of the show. You're welcome back anytime.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, any parting words or shout outs?
Oh my God. Shout outs. I want to give you your flowers. I mean, you're talking about being in spaces that weren't built for us. Mm-hmm. You gave so much life and had people on like me who had dreams of building things and trying things and seeing if it worked in these spaces where there was no blueprint, you know? And so I think a lot of folks didn't always know what to think when you think about me and some of my peers who have done amazing work. So I just want to say, I know how hard it is to, you know, have your own, you know, your own shop. And I love to hear the expansion. As you say, I'm an inspiration to you. I know you are inspiring me. And I know you also have inspired so many people. So I just appreciate my crazy. I'm going to drag myself right now because, y'all, my schedule is so. Listen, I have two EAs, okay? Like, personal, professional. It's a lot. It's a lot. Shout out to Jasmine and Emma. That's who we going to shout out because they keep my life running. So I would be lost without my amazing admin support, two Black women who, again, I'm proud to pour into, who allow this Black woman to do as much as she can for her family and her community and also take some time for herself because rest matters. I learned that from a mentor, the amazing Dr. Bernice King, who is an amazing person, and she always stresses rest because it is important to recharge as we continue the work that we got to do. So that's my shout outs. Thank you for having me. Oh my God. I feel like I rambled, but I was good. You did ramble.
You didn't ramble. Goddess will talk to you soon.
Peace. All right. Bye, Zach.